Somebody helped me, and that's why I'm here. I used to be like you are, and somebody helped me, and that's why I'm here. And that's why I'm here. And that's why wherever you see me, wherever I'm at in an AA meeting, in Louisville, Kentucky, or anywhere else, and somebody says, "Why are you here?" I used to be like you are, and somebody helped me, and that's why I'm here. He said, "Come on, go with us. I have made arrangements to have you admitted to a psychiatric hospital in Louisville by a doctor." And he said, "I hope you'll come and go with us." And those old guys, even in AA, then were sarcastic as hell. Yeah. And I said, "You want me to go looking like this?" And he said, "Of course not. Do you have a place to change?" And I thought, "You son of a..." Those old guys, they were that way. I feel sorry for the youngsters. We talk about that. You never get to meet those old guys. Greatest old guys in the world. Guys like old Wino Joe. You know, it's sad you'll never get to meet them. They were characters, boy. I remember old Wino Joe when John Hopkins wrote those 20 questions to decide if you're an alcoholic. You've read them, haven't you? Joe got madder than hell. Joe said, "What the hell is a psychologist doing writing questions to find out if a guy's an alcoholic? He ain't no business writing them damn things. A drunk ought to write them." So he said, "I'll write them." So Joe wrote his own questions to find out if you're an alcoholic. One of them was, "Have you ever had the roof of your mouth sunburned?" "You ever been run over by your own car while driving?" "Have you ever been arrested while in jail?" Probably the best one Joe wrote was, "Have you ever mastered the art of puking out of a moving vehicle without it blowing back in?" Hey, I see a lot of people out there in the audience identifying. They identify. But anyway, they were some coarse old birds. But they put me in that hospital, and I was in there. And strangely enough, in that psychiatric hospital on the 21st day of August, 1962, AA went in there for the very first time. The first AA meeting ever held was to be held that night through the efforts of Jack Dawes and another guy in Louisville, Kentucky. Now, you got to remember, in 1962, there was no such thing as treatment programs. There was no such thing as alcoholics being admitted to hospitals. There was no such thing as doctors talking to alcoholics. Doctors didn't like alcoholics. We didn't pay them. And I'm sure that's why they didn't like it. You couldn't go anywhere. You were a drunken SOB, and that was the end of it. If you went anywhere, you went to jail. And that's why a lot of the old guys like me, you know, you hear them talk about jails. I was in there 27 or 30 times for public drunkenness, and it was just because that's the only place they had to take you. They picked you up, put you in jail. No place else to go. You were not very well liked. Insurance companies didn't pay for alcoholism, and there was no such thing as treatment centers. And psychiatry, as wrong as they were wrong about alcoholics, but they would take them in and treat them sometimes. Psychiatry thought all alcoholics suffered from a Valium deficiency. If they could get your Valium levels back to their proper place, you'd be okay. They thought that long before General Electric, they thought that you could live better electrically. And they would shoot them needles in your head and shock the hell out of you. And that would help you, they thought. I've got a friend down in Evansville, Indiana. Even today, you shake hands with him, your watch will light up. I mean, he's been through some of them, you know. But that's what they thought. And some of them were compassionate enough to believe with Valium, shock, the discovery of the underlying emotional disorders and a touch of AA, you could be okay. So I was in there for the week, and the 20th day of August, a nurse come walking in that room, shook her finger in my face, gave me that Al-Anon handshake. You've seen it, haven't you? I'll pay for this tonight. But she said, "Don't you go anywhere tonight. We're going to the AA meeting." I said, "What in the hell is an AA meeting? I never heard of AA. Never." She said, "It's a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous." I said, "Alcoholics Anonymous? Are you insinuating you think I'm an alcoholic? She said, I'm not insinuating anything. I said, I'll have you know that I'm no damned alcoholic. And she looked me square in the eye and said, if you're not one, there ain't any. And I said, well, I'm not going. Why would a Skid Row wino say that to that nurse? For the same reason an 18-year-old kid today will tell you they're not alcoholic. For the same reason a 50-year-old executive will tell you they're not alcoholic. It has absolutely nothing to do with who you are, or where you've been, or where you come from. It's simply an admission you've got a problem you can't handle. If I tell you I'm an alcoholic, I am openly admitting to you that I have a problem I can't handle, and I was not built that way. The very first word of the very first step says we. And I was not a we person. I was an I person. And I'll take care of it. I'll handle it. I don't need you. I don't need God. I don't need anybody. And I'm no damned alcoholic. And she said, maybe you could be wrong about that. Who in the hell ever heard of somebody in the first week of sobriety being wrong? Why, it's unheard of even to this day. You want me to admit that I'm wrong? It's not in an alcoholic's vocabulary. And it didn't start with me, it goes way back. There was an alcoholic out west one time who was drunk and come out of a saloon. And an old man rode into town on a mule. And that drunken alcoholic cowboy went out and asked that old man when he got off that mule, he said, hey, old man, can you dance? And that old man said, no, I don't know nothing about dancing. That alcoholic cowboy said, I bet you can. He got this six-shooter out and started shooting at that old man's feet, and he got to dancing. When he fired that sixth bullet, that old man reached up on the back of that mule and got a shotgun. He stuck it up in that alcoholic's face. He said, did you ever kiss a mule's ass? He said, no, but I've always wanted to. No, but I've always wanted to. That was our philosophy, you know. Damned if I'll admit I was wrong. I always wanted to. Okay. Well, she said, you'll be back there with me tonight, or I'll put you over there in one of those rooms where the doorknobs are on the outside. Now, if you've never been in a nut house, they have architectural defects in them. Some doors have one knob that ain't on your side. And I thought, well, I guess I better go, you know. And I hated to go. They had a square dance that night, and in a week's time, I'd met a young lady in there, and I'd fallen in love, and that's about par for the course in a nut house. Well, I mean, you go in them treatment centers today and watch them drunk. You know, they fall in love in there, and you see them walking down those corridors, and they're holding hands with each other, blinking eyes, and they can't wait till they get out of there. A lot of times they don't. The only thing I know that's dumber than that is that people that work in there try to separate. I'm serious. If you work in one of them nut houses or drunk wards or treatment centers or whatever the hell you are, if you got two lovers in there, leave them alone. Do everything in your power to keep them together. Because if you separate them, they'll screw up four people. They belong to each other. Just leave them alone. And well, I was madder than hell, and nurses got me by my earlobe, took me back to a damn meeting I didn't want to go to, and there stood some old woman in the door. About 60 years old, gray-haired lady, Margaret Bivin was her name. Beautiful lady. She looked at me and smiled, called me honey. Put her arm around my shoulder, that old woman did. She said, hi, honey. She said, honey, would you like a cup of coffee and a cookie? And I thought, I wonder who in the hell she thinks she's talking to. I'm from 4th and Central, a macho drunk. A cup of coffee and a cookie. A half a pint and a hooker. A cup of coffee and a cookie. Well, I went in there and sat down, and some old fool got up to talk like I am tonight, and he was trying to share with me an experience. And I didn't want to hear it because I'm a turkey. I was a big turkey back then, big turkey. And he's trying to tell me that at one time in his life, he tried to figure out some way to live out there in that society without being restless, irritable, and discontent. He tried his damnedest to find some way to live out there without needing alcohol to feel good. And that didn't work too well for him, so he tried to find some way to drink just enough alcohol to feel good, to fit into the atmosphere and the party of the girl. He tried and he failed miserably. And he tried over and over and over and over again and failed and failed and failed until he got worse and more miserable and lonely and desperate. And finally some guy came along and he said, I used to be like you are, and I found a way out of the trap. I'd like to show it to you if you want to see it. I'd like to help you if you'll let me. But if you're not interested, why don't you stick around long enough to find out what it costs to continue to be what like you are? We'll take you to the cemeteries, the penitentiaries, and the insane asylums and just let you look around. We'll take you to an AA meeting and let you look around. And then you decide. You decide if you want what we have. But at least you'll know. Don't drink. Come to the meetings and get in the car. And I interrupted him, made a fool out of myself in there. They tried to shut me up, and I wouldn't shut up. It was pathetic, and I'm not the least bit proud of it. And they were going, not going, you know. And finally, the meeting was over, and I left, and there stood that damned old woman. Put her arm around me and smiled. She said, honey, you come back next week now. I said, we need people like you. And I thought, they ought to put that old broad in a home. Get her off of the street. I went back the next week because they made me go. So I went back and sat down next to some grouchy old man. Grouchy old fool. I don't have to tell you all the rest of that story. He became my sponsor. He said, how you doing, boy? And I thought, really, it's none of his business. Never saw him before till the week before. What the hell did he care how I was doing? I didn't hesitate to tell him. And I thought, well, why don't you be nice to him? He's old. You ought to be nice to old people. I really believe that tonight. I said, I'm doing all right, old man, but I ain't no damn alcoholic. They make me come back here. And he said, really? I said, really? You're not an alcoholic. I said, no, I am not an alcoholic. He said, well, if you ever find out what's wrong with you, you ought to do something about it. You look like hell. And I thought, well, you old bastard. I got up and moved away from him. And my psychiatrist explained to me what was really wrong with me. You know, that I suffered from no identification. That I really was never appreciated by the railroad, being my father was in the personnel department, you know. And all of these things that had happened to me, that I really didn't know who I was. I'd never had a chance to grow and mature. And, you know, I thought, yeah, he's right, man. You know, what he's telling me is everybody else's fault. I love that. And so I marched back to that meeting, and that next week to that meeting, sat down next to that old man. He said, how you doing? I said, I'm doing just fine, but I ain't no damn alcoholic. My psychiatrist told me that I never grew up. I never had an identification. I really don't know who I am. He said, I believe that. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, boy. I ain't no damn psychiatrist. I'm an insurance salesman. But he said, trust me. If you'd have been a grape picker in the Garden Eden, you'd have been a drunk. I got up and moved away from him. If you're new, you don't want to associate with them old people. You don't want to associate with people that tell you the truth, because if there's one thing I could never handle was the truth. I heard a very well-educated minister say one time when somebody asked him to define God. And you know, that would be a major problem for most people. Put a definition to God. And the minister said that God is the intangible spirit of truth that lives in the hearts of men. The intangible spirit of truth. If it had anything to do with truth, it totally escaped me. Why is it, and it's a mystery to me today, that why is it that all of the people on God's earth could see what was wrong with me and I couldn't see it? How many of us look at everybody that surrounds us today that come to the program new, whether we sponsor them or not, and we look and see and know what's wrong with them? They're drunken turkeys, and they can't see it. How many people do we know that wander this earth totally insane? Not in the biochemical sense, not in the brain chemistry sense that creates insane institutions or mental institutions, but the insanity of our own minds in the inability to see ourselves for what we are. In society today, they call it denial. In AA, for many, many years, they called it dishonesty. You are so totally dishonest with yourself as to what you are totally insane. And if you're looking for sanity, the only way you will ever attain it is to become totally honest with yourself as to what and who you are. And trust me when I tell you that whatever degree of honesty you attain in a lifetime, you will attain the same degree of sanity. And I was as crazy as a June bug for what I could see about me. I could not see it. I left there and went and spent 40 days in a mental institution in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, the only place in the state that treated alcoholics. Stayed there for 40 days and came back to Louisville. Started going to AA meetings with those old guys. They wouldn't let you talk. They wouldn't let you say nothing. You talked to them. You went in the car with them. There were three or four guys in the car. If you had anything to say, you talked to them. You know. And when you went to a meeting, you sat and listened to some guy share. And when the meeting was over, they went to the Frisch's or Jerry's or Shoney's, and they sit and had coffee and related to what that guy had to say compared to their own lives, because they knew the secret for all of us is identification. We must identify. AA is the only organization known to God or man in the world that said, let me tell you about me. I don't care how many philosophies that say they're AA oriented or whatever they may be, it becomes an impossibility. Because any place that says, sit out here and let me tell you about you, is not what AA says. AA says, let me tell you about me. And all the successful people in the world of Alcoholics Anonymous that you'll ever meet, I'm sure will tell you, they're like the guys sitting on the bed and the two fellows with the book. And those two guys are saying, let me tell you, my friend, about me. And let me tell you what this book says about me. And let me tell you what this book says that I identified with. And I'm sure that if you'll come, and if you'll listen, and if you'll read, you too will identify. To the extent that never again, unless you so desire, unless it's your choice to live that way, never again do you have to exist in a world instead of live. Never again do you have to suffer through the painful experiences of loneliness and degradation and despair, of restlessness and irritability and discontent. Never again, unless you so desire. Because you see, you can have what we have if you've decided you want it. And I never had enough sense to know that. And I wanted to be argumentative with them guys. And I said to that old man after a period of time, one time I was standing talking to some guy, and a guy was asking me my opinion about something. And I said, well, you know, in my opinion, and old Hillary walked by me and stopped. And he turned around, and I thought, I wish I hadn't said that. Have you ever done that, and your sponsor's around, you think, oh, God, I wish I hadn't said that. He turned around to me, and he said, what'd you say? I said, I said to that fellow, we were talking about something, I said, in my opinion, he said, who in the name of God would be interested in your opinion? Do you know anybody that's interested in your opinion? And what hurt was, I really couldn't think of anybody. I didn't know nothing for anybody to be interested, you know. But You know, how can you argue with the fact for those guys that you pile us over alcohol, your drunkenness proves it. An unmanageable life, look at where you are. Insane, you're dishonest. Of course, you're absolutely crazy when you can't see yourself for what you are. But the final straw I had with them, and the final thing that led to the surrender, the final thing that someday, somewhere in your life, the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous takes over. You know in your own heart everything's going to be okay. It doesn't matter who else knows it. It doesn't matter who else cares. You know it. When that surrender process comes, and it's the magic of AA, it's just the magic, and it's all in the first 3 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that the magic occurs in your life. And I said to that old man one night, after 8 or 9 months sober, I said, I want you to understand one thing, old man, if you never understand anything else in your life, never, never since the time I was born do I ever remember having any kind of contact or feeling or conviction about God. I don't believe in God, and I don't propose to start now. And he looked at me and he said, who in the hell cares what you believe in? I said, don't you care what I believe? He said, I couldn't care less what you believe in. I said, how about God? He said, he cares less than I do. I said, you mean nobody cares what I believe in? He said, how can you keep being so dumb? How can you keep coming to these meetings and remain that damn stupid? You know, he said, I've often thought there's nobody in this program you need, but you're about to convince me they are. How can you be that dumb to think that anybody in this room, including God, would care what you believe in? You missed the whole point about AA, my friend. The point is, if you're new, I believe in you. I believe if you don't drink, go to meetings, and get in a car, you're going to be okay. I believe if you stay with me, you'll be all right. What do I do, old man? You stick with me, kid, and you'll be all right. You don't have to be a mental heavyweight to figure that out. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that. I believe in you. And you know what? So does God. God believes in you. God believes that if you'll stay here with Him, if you'll stay here with us, you'll be okay. God believes that about you. And the greatest thing in the world about that is that if you stay here long enough, let us believe in you, and let God believe in you, you will believe in God. And you will believe in us. And you will become willing to take the action that is necessary to change your life. Because from the day you were born, you are a product of your own action. Through all of your infancy, your teenage, your drunkenness, you are a product of your own actions. In Alcoholics Anonymous, you are a product of your own actions. But every action you become willing to take is exactly what you will turn out to be. And once I could understand that God would give me the serenity and give me the courage and give me the wisdom, and truly and sincerely, God was the Spirit of truth that lives in the hearts of men, that allows us to accept life on life's terms. It keeps us from reacting. Nobody has to tell us about God. Nobody has to tell us about AA. What we know about it is okay. Education, nothing wrong with it. But it's what in the hearts of people in this program that makes the difference. And truly, Alcoholics Anonymous is a language of the heart. I show you how I feel by what I do. My own action will show you how I feel. And I don't have to tell you that. And I can't tell you that. And what AA is, I can't tell you that. And what AA causes us to feel and believe and care and love, I can't tell you that. But I do know that it's the spirit of a fellowship that makes us all what we are. If I can tell, I love you, I don't love you for what you are. I can tell a boy I love him because I don't love you for what you are. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that I love you because of what I am when I'm with you. You see, because of you, I'm a better person. Maybe in some small way, because of me, you're better. But there's one thing we all know, that because of each other, we're all better people. And I love you for that. I love you for what I am when I'm with you. And because of you, I stand here tonight a better human being. Telling you that God is a spirit that we feel and know in this program. And I can prove that. And you won't find it anywhere else. That I can take this room tonight and put it in total and absolute silence. And you will have a feeling come over you that is so peaceful that you know, you're going to be okay. And it doesn't have anything to do with what I said. It's a feeling that God has given to all of us. I was sober 13 months and married, Gay. We've had the best life in the world. When I told Hillary I was getting serious about her, she said, "Bring her up here." I said, "Why? I told you to." "Oh, it makes sense." I brought her. And Hillary signed two people to take her to Al-Anon. He tried to explain to her that if we were going to live together, we had to live separately. You have to learn to live and make yourself happy. You have to learn that your reaction to life will depend upon how you react to life. And that Al-Anon says there are many dimensions to love and happiness, and you can find that in each other. And certainly we would be less without each other, but our individuality and our structure of happiness and learning and loving comes as individuals. And he sent her to Al-Anon, and two of a couple took her that first night in 1963 to Al-Anon. And she's been going ever since, and I've been going to AA. I got my job back with that railroad in 1974. I was asked to start an alcohol and drug abuse program for that same railroad. A guy they called useless, lazy, undependable, and shiftless and didn't want me on their property. They asked me to start that alcohol program. I stayed there for 14 years with it. Loved every minute of it. We were taken over by larger conglomerates and how that goes in our society today, and that's okay. I couldn't stay. It got too professional for me. You know, it got to where you can't tell people to sit down and identify with me. And I don't have to tell you where I come from. It's destroyed treatment. It's destroyed everything else. You know, and it's not good for what we, all the things and efforts we made in the field of alcoholism. But that's another story, not for me to tell. But nevertheless, I stayed, and I retired in 1988. I don't do anything now. I'm good at it. I'm sure if you ever want a seminar put on how to do nothing, call me. I follow Bum Phillips' philosophy, the Houston football coach. When somebody said, "What do you do since you retired, Bum?" He said, "I don't do nothing." And I start that at noon. So I'm good at it. I go to AA and sponsor people and love every damn minute of them. Hate them kids. Got a young fella that comes to our house now. He barged in there the other day. You know, got me mad at God, and I didn't like it. I thought, well, it is his fault I'm mad at God. And I think I'm justified being mad at God. Because he busted in there and he said to my wife, "Where's Jack?" She said, "He's sitting there in that lounge chair." My wife said, "You know, when he dies, I think I'll bury him standing up. I believe a change of positions would help him." And Eric looked at her and said, "Why don't you bury him face down so he can see where he's going?" And I said, "What the hell are you doing in my house, boy? I didn't send for you. Get the hell out of my house. I didn't ask you in here. Where'd you come from?" And he said, "According to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, God sent me to you." And I've been mad at God ever since. I'm afraid he's got another one. But we have a great life. I'll close by telling you a story. I try to close every AA talk I make with. It was about a man who was walking down a very cold... Guy told me this story 28, 29 years ago. I really don't know who. But it always meant so much to me and other people I've told it to. I get cards in the mail every once in a while. But it was about a man who was walking down a very cold and lonely road one night in the middle of the road, laid a snake. When the man passed the snake spoke to him. And he said, "Mister, please help me. Please, I'm dying in this cold weather. Pick me up and put me under your coat and get me well that I may live." And the man said, I can't do that. You're a poisonous reptile. Surely if I help you, put you under my cold, get you warm, you're restored to vitality, you'll bite. It's your nature to bite. And the snake said, I wouldn't bite you if you saved my life. And the man picked him up and put him under his coat. And when the snake got warm, he bit him. And the man grabbed him and threw him out from under his coat and back to the road. And he looked at him and he said, I thought you promised if I helped you not to bite. And with a snickering grin on his face, the snake looked at him and said, you knew what I was when you picked me up. My friend, if you're ever sitting somewhere in the confines of your own home, a nightclub, a joint, or wherever it may be, if it's your decision to take the cap off of the bottle or the cork out of the jug, justify it to those who will listen, rationalize it to those who care to hear. But if you've been here, if you know me, if you've met us, you know what it is when you pick it up. Thank you for having me in Chicago.